Blog Talk Radio.
Divine, all blessed peace and love
joy and prosperity. You are listening now live to the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Hudu Obeya Bokor, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, universal, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic from a Pan-African Hudu world spiritualist perspective, understanding that all is truly and indeed a blessing if you can just see beyond the veils, for it is all just an illusion and a test and one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. And it is crucial to the very foundation of my understanding, my teaching, my walk, and my works along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we are challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth, and it is our personal place of power and understanding. The place from where I begin and the place from where I crystallize and realize all endeavors, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny, and I alone create and co-create my divine all-blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe. Today is November 25th, 2013, and I am emanating and vibrating with you for you live, virtually, verbally, cosmically, quantum universally, from this working temple of the House of the Divine Prince. And of course, we have a very special family member present here with us today, broadcasting live from the nation, the Gullah Geechee Nation. Queen Ket is with us today. I am going to go to the phone lines quickly. Let's see. Queen Ket, is this you?
Peace and blessings. How honored to do today.
All is a blessing. I am truly honored, as always, to have you back. And so frequently, I know the gravity of your schedule and the importance of your work. So I'm grateful each and every time you find the opportunity to use my show as a platform to not only address the Gullah Geechee Nation, but address all of our people as a co-community. And so, again, we're very honored and happy to have you back again today, and we invite all of our listeners to join in with us at 347-215-8967. Indeed, if you have a question or a comment, do press the number one, and Queen Ket or myself will be more than happy to address you. So welcome, Queen Ket. Harambe.
Harambe, so glad for Dio with the Divine Prince of the Coven. This your time and thing like that. So glad for see on the program, on the TV and thing like that. Because you know me, the always see on the Facebook and thing like that daily. So we're so glad for Dio one more again for this your program. And especially have a key greetings to all the family what did in NOLA and thing like that. We're looking forward for coming back down there in 2014. And thing, and so that we can gather the family together one more again round the circle and with the drum.
Ashe, ashe, and indeed we look forward to that. I'm going to put you on the spot. We're looking forward to Mardi Gras Day. Are you still going to be with us?
I have it on the calendar if you gave me the right date.
March 4th, 2014. And Quinette, please get with me about what you're going to wear. If we need to make something for you or bead something for you, I don't know, you may have beaders there in the nation, but if you need us to get something together for you, we need to get on it now.
Then we need to get on that now, because I would rather have something that is done right there where the spirit of everything is, and I'll enhance it from here. But so we'll definitely get together online to talk about that, and then we can proceed forward. But I have March the 4th down on the calendar. So I'm just waiting to hear back from all of the children there.
All is a blessing.
Get me out, Jonah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's going to be quite a day. A lot has been put into place for not only for us coming out with New Indian Tribe, which is a very complex and political and in some cases ugly thing to do here in the culture, in the city. It's very competitive. It's very traditional. Families get involved. Favor gets involved. You know, just like people do with sports and athletic teams, you know, you choose sides, and people tend to choose sides aggressively. To have accomplished what Black Hawk Voodoo Maroons have already accomplished, it's a masterpiece in effort from everybody involved. And certainly we want to thank you for being a part of that, offering to be a part of that, and ultimately being here to walk with us Mardi Gras Day. It's going to be a very special day. Mardi Gras culture, in terms of carnival, Black Carnival Indian, is very secretive. So it's not a whole lot I can really say publicly here on the radio.
Of course.
We're coming out in a very special way. We're going to be walking with a very special group.
Yes.
We'll have celebrities. As Queen Ket is a celebrity in her own right, we will have other celebrities also walking with us. It's going to be a major, major, record-breaking, history-making event. So we certainly appreciate you and your time and your effort, and we want to get started, will, with you in the next 24 hours.
That's
all it's going
to
really take is you and I having a conversation or a private chat for about 30 minutes to 45 minutes. Give me some idea of what you can work with. See what we already have in mind, and then we can just get to it.
And we'll flow.
I even have a world-renowned artist whose name I can't reveal until actually Mardi Gras Day, who's assisting me in this process. So it's going to be major, Queen Ket.
Right. So do we need to have like a float with the song I'm Coming Out playing, but we just, you know, make it into New Orleans style? Do we need to hook that up? Because that's what it sounds like.
Well, we just need you to come, and if you want to bring any of the village, if they want to come and enjoy not only Mardi Gras, but Mardi Gras, Carnival Indians, all the things that go on here in the course of that day, please bring them. And if they need us to secure lodging for them, we have access to Black-owned bed and breakfast lodging here, and I'm talking Antebellum Mansion-style lodging. For very reasonable. So if you need to bring other people, we need to know that.
Well, I know there are folks, you know, that as when I came before, we have our delegation of folks, and I know that there will be a delegation of folks coming with me. So you and I will definitely talk more about the numbers and the timing and the space and all of that.
Yeah.
Definitely offline, but I'm looking forward to being back there, because each and every time that I've been in NOLA, it's been a blessing to have people actually reconnect fully. And I know exactly what you said in terms of the competitive nature. That was obvious, that there's a competitive energy that's there that I feel like at one point was fun competition, in the sense that, okay, I'm going to outstyle you, I'm going to outprofile you, you know, when I come out. So that part is all right, but then when it turns into the other energy, like you mentioned, some favoritism and all those kinds of things, we have to go past that, because we are at such a critical time, especially for people of the African diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
We are in a divine shift that allows us to reconnect not only with one another, but with land. And we need to use all of our energy toward positivity and creativity. We need to be about upliftment right now and unification. We don't need to promote that which is a remnant of enslavement, which is pitting each other against each other in a literal way, you know, and where there is any kind of negative energy that has an opportunity to surface and then to take control of the situation. We need to all look at it that it is one family. Every family has some differences in it, But we need to get together and resolve those differences behind closed doors and come out as a united front. And that's what our work, as you know, Brother Divine Prince, is always about. Is always about letting people realize what you say all the time, that all is a blessing. And the fact that we as African people can still be in North America all these hundreds of years later, still continuing the African traditions that this show so celebrates, that Mardi Gras celebrates, that our Heritage Days and our Gullah Festival and our Gullah Geechee Nation International Music and Movement Festival celebrate, that's a blessing in and of itself. Because we weren't even supposed to still be in our African conscious minds at this point. So you know that those healing energies of the drum, those healing energies of the libation ceremonies, those healing energies of the herbal practices have lived on and linger on within our spirits. And that's the kind of power and energy that we want to lay on the streets and on the ground and on every mile that we walk during Mardi Gras. We want to lay down an energy that's about reconnection, not about, you know, divisiveness, but about unity. And so definitely, you know, I loved being there when I came. And, I mean, it felt like everybody in the city welcomed me when I came. The city itself welcomed me by giving me a proclamation from the actual City Council of New Orleans. But then to go pick up the proclamation and then be driven to the door of Ashe Cultural Center. We just going to go right there with just the word Ashe, the power of that in and of itself.
Yeah.
To enter with the drums playing, to enter with the tambourines going, to enter with the Indians coming out, and that there was everybody there. It wasn't about what particular group you masked with that day. It was about us celebrating this tradition and about us celebrating these chiefs and still having them and how our culture has traveled that direction and then back this direction and how we all can remain linked. And I know that for a lot of folks, when they come down there, they come to Mardi Gras to get drunk. They come to Mardi Gras to just get buck wild, as we say. But they miss the parts that you're talking about. They miss the true education of what the culture is. And that's why with even Backstreet Cultural Center, I love what Sylvester's done. Because when I first came to New Orleans, that's where I got a true education. That's when I felt like I really learned what New Orleans and what my people were about, was by going there and meeting him. And I got to just give a shout out to the Fayaya crew.
Fayaya, there we go.
I had to give a shout-out to them just because the second line parade that we were in, when I got up there with my stamp and stick, Fire Y'all looked like we lit fire to the ground right there in that spot. And then the Zulus came over, and they came to that spot. And there was all of this, and that just solidified the knowledge that comes out those doors of Backstreet Cultural Center. We were right there in front of it. And so a lot of people don't always grasp all that. They don't grasp all of what you share in this show. They see a few things on TV and they go there and they want a voodoo doll to stick pins in, or they want to go down and, like I say, go to Bourbon Street, get drunk, you know, but they don't realize there's so much more in the heart of Congo Square that emanates through that whole city. There's so much more that's going on within all of the groups that are masking, and even the whole ceremony too, actually beating, and the how long that takes and how much that takes in terms of personal energy and the wealth that goes into every suit. And so I really want people to over and understand that value of the African tradition that you are continuing there. And that's why, because of how highly elevated all the folks I just mentioned have held this tradition, that's why I agreed to come back to be there for Mardi Gras. I had been told for many years, don't go there for Mardi Gras. I was told that by people who were natives to New Orleans. Don't you go there, you know, for that. But when you reached out and said, will you come with us the day that we're coming out, that to me was an honor in and of itself. And that said to me that the ancestors were well pleased with the steps we'd already shouted together, where we drummed together, and where we poured libation, that this is their time, and that we are them walking around now, and that we are to live out the story and tell it all, because so many people have tried to cover it by just you know, masking it in tourism all these years. Yes.
And I know for me, Queen Cat, a part of my personal journey, you have motivated and empowered and mentored and fostered a great deal of what you see me do here. I'm operating within New Orleans culture. I'm reinforcing and teaching and sharing and bringing New Orleans culture. But a great deal of my motivation comes from what I see you do and the Gullah Geechee Nation. And that's another reason why we invited you. We want you to bring Gullah. We want you to bring Basket. We want you to bring Shout. And we're going to shout that day. Okay.
Oh, yes, for sure.
We're going to do it with the tambourine and the drum and the bell. We're going to do it. And we're going to be suited up and do it.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to be honoring all of our connectedness and our ancestors, if you will, because we have a connected ancestral history. Between our nation and your nation, our land and your land, our people and your people. And we live in a time now where to touch on the adversity again, the adversity has gotten very sophisticated. It's political now. It's financial now. You know, it's gentrification now. It's coming through and redoing neighborhoods now for the sake of purposes that don't usually benefit us, and not only do they usually not benefit us, we're quite often not at the table. Now, I know that's, you know, different for you and maybe for me and maybe a handful of other people, but we have got to find a way to empower greater numbers of our community to be at those tables and to be a part of doing the work. We want to share sort of the romantic feeling and celebration of culture and heritage and tradition. But people don't realize, you know, we're usually up all night by Mardi Gras morning. This year I was still sewing at 4 a.m. Mardi Gras morning, still trying to get out there by sunrise to do what, for me and many others, is a very religious experience. Mm-hmm. We aren't out there celebrating, quote-unquote, Mardi Gras. We are celebrating Black Indian Carnival. We are celebrating African traditional carnival. And it's a very spiritual and religious experience for many of us. And many of our ceremonies begin before the crowds begin to gather on St. Charles for the parade. You know, many of us are at the cemetery at 5 a.m. Many of us are at sacred grounds at 5 a.m., at Big Mama's house at 5 a.m., leading prayer, leading Indian Red. The baby dolls are already out. The bone men, the skeletons are already out on the street, which represent very profound spiritual, cultural traditions for us. And another goal or agenda, if you will, for me, moving into 2014, is to also do that for the Gullah Geechee. I think many of your spiritual traditions have been hidden, stolen, masked, bastardized, you know, retranslated, and I think more attention needs to be given to that. I know just in my own research, it's often hard for me to even research what our spiritual practices and traditions were in the Gullah Geechee. And I ask your assistance in helping me to find that and to gather it if it needs to be gathered. But I'm willing to contribute and commit to that end, create that art.
Yeah, a lot of what you outlined in advance is part of the reason why that's difficult to find. One of the things, as you well know, is that you really need to be in a place, in a space where people live the tradition to really absorb it and to really understand it. That's number one. So because we live our traditions, we don't write them down for people. Since we are an oral people, we carry them within. And so the griot, the jele musa, we carry it within. So that's one dynamic of it. The other part is because of what you also mentioned, the bastardization, which is a word I use often, of what has happened with African tradition and especially with Gullah Geechee. That's one of the reasons we do not write about our spiritual practices And we do not tell people. And when people go around and find these books, like Blue Roots, for instance, that book was a wild goose chase book. People were telling this man things so that he would leave them alone, so that he would just run around, and never find what he was looking for. Everybody on the island knew what he was looking for, but we knew he's not of us. So he had no business trying to look for what he was looking for. So people gave him incorrect information. There's another book that's out that's supposed to be, Hoodoo Medicine, I think is the name of it, that is supposed to be about Gullah Geechee healing herbs. The pictures that are even drawn in that book are not the pictures of our herbs. And then what they say that those herbs are used for or how to prepare some of them is inverted or inaccurate. And that, again, was intentionally done because this person said she was writing for college. But then what she ended up doing was she published what people told her, but people were telling her misinformation because, again, they were like, well, she's not of us, so why should we give away our sacredness to her? So they told her misleading information, and then she called herself trying to draw these pictures or whatever. So I bought this book for the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition Al-Kibulan Archive. Like, I buy all these books that claim to be about Gullah Geechee. And was reading through the book and started laughing my head off because I'm like, what is this? That's not this, and that's not this herb, and what is that? So I took it to some elders, and I said, now, don't look at the words on this page. I would cover what words she had on the opposite page. And I would say, now, look at this, and tell me what plant that is. And they're like, I don't even know what that is, or that's such and such. And then I'd uncover what she had written there, and they bust out laughing because it was not the same thing. And so one of the things that people often say about Gullah Geechee is that we are isolated. They often say we're clannish. Well, in this case, I'll take both of those because we have to isolate ourselves to insulate ourselves from the exploitation and the bastardization. And you know this quite well with the practices of hoodoo, with voodoo, with vodun. People have bastardized it and made it all a negative and made it all a scary thing. And so as a result, they don't look at the healing elements. They're not looking at the spirituality. They're not looking at tradition. And so we prefer to not contribute to that and not allow people to have things at hand that can further try to exploit the Gullah Geechee name, but somebody else who's non-Gullah Geechee calls himself doing something that actually, as you know full well, can cause harm. If you are dealing with the wrong herb or the herb in the wrong way, you can cause harm. If you open up certain gates, you can't necessarily close them back. So there are things that when it comes to the sacred and the healing, these are things that we've kept basically in the bush arbor, in the brush arbor, you know, amongst those who live the tradition and the culture. There are many things that are still, as others who study us say, are Africanisms that we do on a regular daily basis. That's just part of our lifestyle. We don't say, well, oh, this so-and-so is a practitioner or, oh, this and that. We don't have to practice something because we live in it. We mastered it. We don't have to practice. So that's the difference is that people are hunting for things and writing, but what they're finding in writing is not written by us because we tend to still pass it down in the traditional way that our indigenous ancestors did in the motherland and here is by word of mouth, by you seeing, by you learning, by you living. By you knowing under these conditions, this is what you do, this is what you use, this is how you heal. And so I think it's really critical that we begin to have more of those private spaces, like you said, even with masking. We can't talk on this phone about that. But there's things that we can get in the bush and we can get in the bead room and we can share. And that's the kind of situation when it comes to healing. That's what needs to be done when it comes to true African tradition. Unfortunately, because of the other part of what you mentioned that's going on in the city now and that's going on here, all fueled by tourism, is that people will fake things, okay? People will put on a ritual who have no power. People will stage something because that's what the tourists will pay to see. So we also have that to combat. So those of us who truly bear the mantle, we have to know when is the time and the place for certain things and when is not. And we have to continue to speak the truth. And that is what's going to stand when everything else falls. And so it's critical, as you said, to be at the table. And sometimes you have to create the table. You have to be the one to find the tree and build a table yourself, and then bring the other ones and say, look, this is my land. So you're going to come sit at this table right here. I don't have to wait for an invitation to come to your table. And so that's critical. And one of the things that I think is a blessing right now that's helping some people at least journey to myself, to find out more about these things is the fact that we have social media, but also the media in the sense of the films and the shows that are coming out of New Orleans that people are watching. And I was very happy to see Wendell Pierce, who I got to party with literally in New Orleans the last time we were there, actually doing the work he's doing in the community and being able to be on national television to talk about that. And I love the fact that Angela Bassett and those have you there as a consultant, not just a reenactor or an actor, but a consultant to say, well, we want to present certain things on television, but we don't want to bastardize the culture. We want the truth. We want to present it in a way that's respectful to the community of New Orleans. And so I think that that's critical, and I think that, again, that divine shift that we are in is the shift toward truth, where more and more people are having to have scales removed from their eyes so they can see beyond the veil, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show. And so the more that they tune in with their spirit and with their heart and truth, the more that will be revealed.
And I'm so glad you sort of gave me an opportunity to speak to that, particularly as it relates to American Horror Story and Coven. Because I've had this conversation now, you know, repeatedly since the episode aired, in terms of what we were representing and how much influence did we really have in terms of what we represented. And the first thing I want to say is we were given extraordinary license in terms of what we were going to do, what we were going to wear, and even what Angela wore and how the whole ritual was to be played out. There were very major changes made to that scene that we, the local community here, made and advised. Not everything, of course, so I've also had to reinforce that it is entertainment. And I've had to repeat that. It's entertainment. We were paid performers who all have some expertise in real life in that tradition. There were really no background or extras or other actors there, really, other than Angela Bassett, the young lady who was actually there for the fertility ritual, and the guy who carried the goat was a stuntman. And originally I was to carry the goat, but they changed their mind at the last minute about that because they didn't want the blood to get on my stuff, my clothes, my implement, and then have to, you know, replace that. So that's why they brought in the guy to carry the goat. But for the most part, we're caught in a position right now in 2013 where we have to live, we have to pay our bills, and if we can be blessed enough to earn a living through your skills, your talents, that can be a good thing. But there's a dark side to that. And I'm sure you understand. I'm sure the Gullah Geechee Nation understands. I think even in terms of your basket weaving, I've seen some abuses there. Where the craft is not given the respect it's due, the craft persons are not given the respect or the earnings due, and then you have big companies, big corporations, or even small groups of people who decide they want to look out for their own interests.
Right.
And sort of create an environment, a market, where we all end up at each other's throat. And the competition does come in. And, well, who got more camera time? And, well, who had speaking roles? And, you know, all these other questions come into play. So for me personally, and I try to say it as much as I can, I make my agenda as obvious and as clear as possible. At the end of the day, it's about voodoo for me. And I think most people who are paying attention know that. Even when I'm doing acting jobs outside of that arena, I'm still there for voodoo and for our culture and for the Maroons and for the African diaspora, if you will. And each opportunity to give voice to our ancestors, to give voice to our story, to present our story, I'm definitely going to be there to take those opportunities. But
right.
we have to take greater stewardship as a community and as a people over our intellectual property, our cultural
Absolutely.
Property and knowledge and wisdom, and show it reverence and honor first among ourselves.
Absolutely.
Because
right.
if we don't respect it and honor it, we can't expect the outside folk.
Anybody else to do so. Absolutely.
Yeah, to respect it and to honor it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And that's such a critical thing, is that when we talk about respect and honor, we can only get to a point of others honoring our craft when we honor ourselves. And that is something that I'm constantly saying to other people, is that people will only respect us as much as we respect each other and respect ourselves. And so if I'm not giving due respect to your position or your title, then why would anyone else? And
mm-hmm.
so I noticed that that's something else, not only in regard to the Sweetgrass Basketry, but you're one of the folks that's on our Gullah Geechee Nation Facebook fan page, as well as the Queen Quet page that one of my fans created. And you'll notice even this past week, a black woman writes a so-called review of an interview that I was on last week and is telling people how, oh, the work that was done, it should be a model to other black communities, but instead of putting the work Queen Quet has done, which is how I was introduced and addressed on a radio show that this woman was referring to, she puts my birth name on there, on her blog. Never
yes,
even
indeed.
References Queen Quet. Never references a head of state. Never references chiefess. Puts my birth name like this is some random chick, you know, off the corner that happened to have been on this talk show. That's not appropriate. And so, therefore, you know, until people of African descent begin to elevate each other, begin to give due respect to each other, even as you walk by each other in the street. I mean, man, at one point we used to say, hey, what's up? You know, peace, peace. What's up, blood? You know, hey, cuz, you know, head nod. We don't get that anymore. People barely
mm-hmm.
give a grunt or say nothing. So when you don't have respect amongst yourselves and for yourselves, others are not going to respect you either. So if they don't respect you, how can they respect your tradition? So again, what is happening is what we see, a replay of the same methodologies that were utilized for transatlantic slave trade being utilized today in the tourism industry. As you said, let's bastardize one piece. Let's elevate one or two people that do the baskets, or one or two people who stage something and say it's voodoo, or one or two people that are going to go over here and sing or dance, and then we'll give them a bunch of money and we'll pit the other sharks into the water now after them, because now everybody else will turn on them because they'll say, well, oh, what about our piece? You know, that is such a consistent practice in terms of enslaving people that I thought people should have learned enough by now to recognize it when they see it. But I see that we have a lot of work still to do due to ego, etching God out. If people would stop etching God out, then they would get vision, they'd get knowledge, and then they could get understanding and realize when there's an economic engine, we need to be on that train together. You don't throw each other from the train, you see. So that's the biggest issue that I see, is there's a lot of us who become gatekeepers. We don't let the others know that are truly living the tradition that something's going on. We'd rather say, oh, there's some money, I'll just go and act like I could do it. Well, why are you going to act like you could do something when there is someone who lives this every day? Let that person come into the midst and let them bring everybody in as well. And, you know, when I was the Gullah Heritage Consultant for The Patriot with Mel Gibson, I dealt with a lot of what you were talking about, having to balance reality with the theatrical. You know, what they want as picturesque is not true Gullah Geechee living, like having a wide-open village on a beach in 1776 when we should have been maroons, so maroons would be inland, we would be hidden amongst the trees. Y'all guys on this beach. So we had to balance that because Hollywood wanted the shot. They wanted it to look a certain way, you know, and they were like, well, we hope people don't really know the truth. I'm like, but it's not. No, people know the truth. I said the difference is going to be just that y'all are taking artistic license with certain aspects of the actual story to make this story go forward as a dramatic piece. And I think that people need to recognize that, that Africans have never not been theatrical people. They've never not been people who are prone to the dramatic. That's what storytelling and that whole genre is about. But it's a way that you present a thing. And so at least in this modern age, we need to still be the consultants that present truth, but it gives us opportunities of education when there are these fictional pieces that we participate in to come back to the community and open up community dialogues like this so that people know what part is reality, what part was artistic license, and then what part is totally staged so that they can start realizing everything is not real. People think reality TV is real, and most of that mm-hmm. stuff is not real. Okay, so it's just dramatic so you'll get the rating. So it takes us still continuing our work in real life. And then when we have these mechanisms to bring them to the bigger screens to now educate the public behind the scenes, this is what really goes on. You know, we have to keep doing that.
That's right. For me, I call it the difference between being a performer and being an entertainer. And, mm-hmm. and performing requires, it can be art, it can be entertaining, but it requires a certain adherence to the rules, to the science, as opposed to entertaining is just, you know, you want to get a laugh, you want to have a good time, but no one really cares if it's serious. No one really cares if it's truthful.
Right.
No one really cares if it's well done. And we have to be concerned about that. Another way of looking at that, particularly for me working within spirituality and religion, is coming of age, initiations, coming into mystery systems.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we look at things like beading, basket weaving, how to make a carnival suit, of how to do very skilled craftsman work, there's an initiation process there that, you know, at one time in our history was greatly respected and honored. And you sat under someone or at the foot of someone or at the apprenticeship of someone and you learned. We now live in a day, in a time, in a culture that sort of, you know, fosters this sense and notion of we can do anything and everything.
Yeah.
Just take me to the website. Give me your booklet. And tomorrow I should be able to do,
and I'm mastered,
you know,
yeah,
what Queen Quet has studied her lifetime to do. I should be able to do what Divine Prince has worked his lifetime to build overnight, and I should be able to do it better than you. And then when that doesn't happen, you know, then they want to bastardize the whole system,
the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all culture. It's all religion. You know, it's all, you know, race. Rather than just honor the process from the beginning. You talked about the time in terms of a beating.
Mm-hmm.
I've woven baskets, but I was a kid. It's been many years since I did that. So I don't quite remember right now the timing, and especially when you get into detail. But I can tell you about beating. And I often refer to Indian time.
Mm-hmm.
A year ahead, that's Indian time. If you're just now talking about getting started, you're late. And you're really not going to be able to get a whole lot done. You can't rush beating. And so I'm assuming you can't rush weaving either. No more than
you
can rush nation building or community building
or
village
building. Right.
And it takes time sitting at the feet of those who've given their service and their time to mastering that thing, that art, that knowledge, that skill. And that's one of the things that I greatly appreciate about you, Queen Cat. It's not only are you real people, grassroots, from the neighborhood, if you will, but you also respected knowledge enough to get a degree and to get a doctorate.
I got a couple of those.
And you actively represent what expertise is. It's not the shortcut. It's not doing things the easy way. You got to get it. You post pictures getting dirty. I'm in the garden. I'm doing the work. You know, I'm not just looking cute and being a face for something. And I think the internet fosters that sort of mindset that all you have to be is the face of something.
I got you.
Just give a look, you know, on your profile, and people will assume that's who you really are. So I appreciate all your posts that reinforce the work. We're talking about it. We be about it.
Oh, yes, for sure. For sure. For sure. And I think that it's critical for us to present the whole person. How can we talk about holistically healing a community and not present a whole person? So to me, this one-dimensionality process that you were even talking about, where people think, okay, put it in a book, put it on DVD, put it on the website, I got it, and I run with it, is totally westernized nonsense. And that's part of why the world is falling apart. It's creating the Wizard of Oz syndrome. You know, everything is this little fake thing, and there's a man behind the curtain, and they don't want you to see the man. But my thing is, no, the curtains are pulled back, so now what you going to do? What can you do now? So the reality is my ancestors had to dig their hands down in this soil, and my soul comes from this soil. So I still dig my hands down in the soil. I still harvest my own fruits, vegetables, nuts, as you can see, the pecans who are selling, all these things, because these are the ways that my community sustain themselves both physically and economically, and we still do. And so I feel that you lead by example. So a lot of people younger than me haven't necessarily done those things. But if they see that it is a possibility, these are the things that you can do. You can have a computer science and mathematics degree. As I told someone on an interview, she was here from France a few weeks back, and she asked about my degrees, and I said, actually, my degrees are in computer science and mathematics, and I graduated with honors. I said, I turned down Yale and Harvard and Virginia Tech. All of them wanted me to come there, and she was in shock. And I was like, yeah, they all were offering me money to come there. I turned them down. That's not where the spirit led me to go. But even with all the degrees that I have that can letter the walls, that's not to me what makes me. When you see we be Gullah Geechee anointed people, I know that God blessed me to do the things that I can do. And so if I can help somebody else with something, that's what I'm about doing. And so I may also, in my mind, not say nothing to them and see mathematical constructs right in front of my face while I'm in the field planting these seeds. But I am still the whole person that knows how to grow the food, that knows how to cook the food. I can still cook. I don't just microwave nothing. I cook for real. I can do that. But while that's cooking, I can still go in the shower, get dressed up, put on my pumps, grab my briefcase, and be ready to walk out the door and go sit at the United Nations or sit with a group of other heads of state that have come to negotiate business. And I think that that's a role that too many have not seen. And too many have not seen that, especially from black women around the world. That image of Nzinga, that image of Yasantawa, that image of Queen Mother Nanny, they've not seen those images. They might have seen Harriet Tubman sit there at Black History Month, but they have not seen the full dynamics and dimensions of Queen Makeda. They have not seen these images before them. So now social media gives us a chance to put these images there, that in 50 and 100 years, someone would look back, and I hope they see what you said you saw, that this is an accurate and active representation of excellence, because it takes all this to be excellent. It takes honing your craft daily to be excellent. How can I represent a culture if I don't hold on to the land and literally have it in my hand? I don't see how I do it.
You can. You absolutely cannot. And like you said, at the most basic level, if you can't feed yourself, clothe yourself, house yourself, meet your basic needs without interdependence on other people who don't have your needs as their priority, as their agenda, you can't. It's impossible.
Right.
And we will just wither away. And that's a fear that I have. I don't necessarily think it'll come true, but it's definitely a fear that I have that we aren't taking our stuff, our sciences, our culture, our arts seriously, and we're allowing others to sort of step in.
Absolutely.
you know, that scenario you painted, you know, and we're left fighting while the promoters, usually outside of our community, the bastardizers, usually from outside of our community, take home the bank and any accolades, and we're left sort of with a mess. Right.
Absolutely. And you know what? Let me tie this to that. And that's part of even why right now I'm on this kind of whirlwind of interviews, because as you well know, we have the Gullah Geechee Land and Legacy Fund that we're doing fundraisers for. And a part of not only the leaving you fighting, I found too many people in, quote-unquote, the black community think everything is free or that everything should be free. They don't want to volunteer their time to things, but they want it done. I'm not going to volunteer. I need to get paid. Okay, this mentality has crept in. We also have this sense of, like, I hate to use the word entitlement, but it's almost like a sense of entitlement that somebody else is out there that need to be doing it. But what are you doing? And then if someone else does it and gets a salary of any kind, why do you got to get paid? You wouldn't do it because you weren't going to get paid. So somebody need to get something because, like you said, they still got to keep their lights on and other things. These people don't take offerings. They take cash,
right,
you know, at the utility companies. So here it is that we have an awkward mindset about truly what it takes to invest in nation building and invest in community and invest in keeping culture alive, wherein when I work with people of other cultural groups, these folks will raise $1 million. We just finished raising $3.6 million in 5 months for the Angel Oak Tree. But yet, we've been having difficulty raising $3,000 for Gullah Geechee culture. Now, think about that. You see? Mm-hmm. Because when you ask other people of African descent, well, we're doing this fundraiser. Oh, really? Oh, I wish I could give. You don't have to wish. You can. Even if you say, here, all I got is a dollar right now, but take this right here, and when I get some more, I'm going to give. It take 3,000 of us to do that, and the fundraiser is over in one day. But instead, we'll make the excuse why I can't give or cheer the person on while they try to do the work to get the money in. I think what you're doing is great. Keep that up. But you're not helping the person keep it up, because you should put your money where your mouth is. Other communities that we complain about, like you said, that walk out of ours with the money, they walk out of ours with the money because our people freely go in there and give it to them. They'll freely go into someone else's store. You mentioned black-owned bed and breakfasts in New Orleans earlier. They'll freely go in a different hotel and pay, but will not look for those black-owned bed and breakfasts.
And
or they'll want a higher standard at the black-owned bed and breakfast than they would have got at the other one.
Right. That's right. And we'll go to the other and pay more money.
Yes.
And then we'll come back to you with that superior service and expect to pay less money.
Money.
And it makes no sense.
No sense.
It makes
no
sense
at
all.
No,
you know,
that's not logical. Mm-mm.
And you may remember, Queen Cat, I'm a former vendor, street vendor. So I have some direct hands-on experience with economics. I long stopped buying into the whole poverty thing. I know what poverty is, particularly outside of our country. But when we really talk about us here in these United States of America, and we talk about giving Gullah Geechee a dollar, and we'll go and waste hundreds of dollars on things that we don't need, things that don't acquire any value, things that are losing value, you know, 2 seconds after you buy it. But the minute you say, you know, we got to save this land, we got to pay these taxes, we got to organize this, we get the hemming and hawing
and
talk about poverty.
Yeah.
You know, how do we move beyond that mindset?
Well, I think programs like this, and I think, again, the work that we're doing in the communities literally every day starts to give people a living example that helps them to change their mind. Biblical scripture says, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so in order to renew one's mind, you have to be open to a renewal process. Some people are not open to it because they've never seen it. I had a man say to me years ago, been down so long, don't know what up is, and that revolted me. I was like, look, I can't buy into none of that. you know, and I ain't never been there, and I ain't plan to ever be that low, you know. And so, but that was his mindset. You know, he was on that Harry Hippie kind of mindset. So the thing is that people oftentimes need deprogramming to be reprogrammed. And the more that we continue to do the work that we're doing, especially, as I mentioned again, with the blessing of social media, that younger people are more actively engaged in it, that they're now getting their elders to sit around and listen to broadcasts like this and say, well, wait a minute, wow, I didn't know that. They're getting on YouTube, they're going, oh, wow, there's Gullah Geechee TV. They never used to even want a crack TV, but we weren't on TV and things like that, and now we got we on TV. So now there's a pride that's starting to develop. So as that pride develops, and the more, it's just like the commercials, the more it plays, the more it gets in the system, the more you start to act in accordance with it. That's programming. So we have to continue to have our own programming. We have to continue to have our own broadcasts like this one. There are other positive brothers and sisters out there. I'm glad that God is bringing us all together in the clearing so that we can share with one another and share and pass these words on and these shows on. And I often go to iTunes and download your shows so that we have them at the Gullah Geechee Al-Kabulon archive as well, so that these are things that I think will help to continue to change the mindsets in the right direction. I know people will look at me. I am the perpetual optimist. I am the person that not only sees the glass as half full, but I then figure out where's the rest of what we need to pour in the glass. That's me. So I'm the active optimist. I'm not just the optimist content with the glass being half full. So, you know, I know someone listening may be the other person, the pessimist. They see it as half empty. Oh, you know, woe is me. All is lost. Well, if you think that way, that's what you'll have. But as a man or woman thinketh, so is he, so is she. We have to continue to think positive. We have to continue to think upliftment. We have to think economic empowerment, development. We have to think abundance, wealth, and as you always say, that all is a blessing. And I believe that if we continue to do that, we are that remnant that is necessary to go forth and make the next quilt out of. We are that remnant to go forth and make the next patch out of. We are that remnant that brings back the tradition at just that divine time. And that's what makes all the difference in the world. You keep living, and people will keep watching, and they'll learn.
And if you don't see and understand that all is a blessing, then you've got to find a way to make it so. We're going to take just a momentary intermission, and we'll be back with more Queen Quet and the Gullah Geechee Nation here on the Power Lunch. All is a blessing. Ashe.
All is a blessing. Ashe.
Congo Square. The Omis Indians. The Omis Indians prepared this place for us. Centuries before our arrival, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated, the Omis Indians prepared this place for us. Centuries before our arrival, Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated, and as the colonizers came, our host, the Omis Indians, they pushed aside our host. The colonizers came and pushed aside our host and introduced us in chains. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Les Places de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies worked is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to stay ourselves, save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life. Which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang. We beat, we be, we was and is. Hail Congo Square, Congo, Congo Square. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us, inside the beat of us. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated, retreated inside the beat of us until we are ready to release them into a world that we recreate, a world heralded by the beat, be, beat, being, beating, being of black heart drums. Heart beat, heart beat. Heart be at this place be heart be we beating place in new world space beating being in place in new world preserving our ancient pace our dance is the God walk our music the God talk first thing we do Let's get together. Circle ourselves into community. No beginning, no end. Connected together and singing, ringing, singing in a ring. Second, let's be original, aboriginal. Be what we were before we became what we are. Be Bambula dance. Be Banza music. And sing song words which have no English translation. Third, let us remember. Let us remember never to forget, even when we can't remember the specifics. We must retain the essentials. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. The bounce, the blood flow, the feel, the spirit grow, energy. Must retain and pass on the essential usness that others want to dissipate, whip out of us.
Whoa!
But no matter, no matter how much of us they prohibit, no matter how much of us they prohibit, deep inside us is us. Deep inside us is us. Remains us inside and needs only the beat to set us free. The beat to free us. It is morning, a sun day, a field without shade, but dark, dark with the people black of us in various shades, eclipsing the sun. With our elegance. We are centuries later now. And still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to be, to be. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. Beat Congo Square. Be Congo Square. Beat. Be. Beat. Be. Beat.
So.
Congo Square. Be. Congo Square.
Divine All Blessed, we most certainly appreciate each and every one listening, enjoying our show on today, and we, as always, invite you to be a part of the conversation at area code 347-215-8967. We do wish to take your questions, comments. I'm not really sure how much time Queen will have left to be with us, so we would like for you to call in if you do have questions or comments right now at area code 347-215-8967. Queen Cat, we want to give you an opportunity to make any announcements that you might need to make pertinent to, you know, your upcoming events or any other projects you might need us to particularly pay attention to right now and support.
Well, definitely there's a couple of major things, and one of which is the fact that the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition is going to be 17 years old in 1 month, on December the 21st. And the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition is the premier organization that has fought for the cultural and land rights of Gullah Geechees worldwide. And so when this organization was started, there were no organizations in the world that existed with Gullah Geechee in the name. And as a result, even of some of that bastardization you mentioned, there are now a plethora of organizations just coming in to be nonprofits, adding Gullah Geechee to the names just to try to see if they can get grant money now to do things. Wherein the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition has always been a grassroots organization with national and international supporters. And so we definitely want folks to go to gullahgeechee.net, and that's G-U-L-L. A-H. You can see the work that we're doing, and you can also email us to gullgeeco@aol.com, gullgeeco@americaonline.com, so that you can send for a membership application. We are in a major membership drive and a community awareness drive so that people under and overstand more about Gullah Geechee land and legacy. And the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition each year sponsors my world tour, and next year the theme for the tour is going to be Gullah Geechee land and legacy. Myself and the Gullah Connection will be traveling to several places. My trip there to New Orleans for Mardi Gras will be part of that schedule, and so we are going to be traveling to a lot of different areas, and we are right now closing out the first quarter of 2014. So if someone wants to host a fundraiser, host a community awareness event, have a histo musical presentation done, a teacher training done, various things, an exhibit to come to an area, please make sure once again to go to GULLGEECO at AOL.com, email us to GoGeeCo at AOL.com, or go to QueenQuet.com, and that's QueenQuet.com, QueenQuet.com, and you can also click the booking link there to connect directly with me to have us come into your community, and then actually you can see, taste, feel a lot of what we've been talking about in this broadcast. And then as a closure to this year and in celebration of the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition's anniversary, we are pushing, and you know because you are on Facebook with us every day and you reshare it to your wall every day, to your supporters, we are pushing to get this last $900, I think it's just under that since I've been on the phone, under $900 at this point for this Gullah Geechee Land and Legacy Fund. And our Gullah Geechee Land and Legacy Fund will help to continue to have heirs property workshops, land rights workshops, as well as to pay taxes on Gullah Geechee land. We are in the process of putting together a fund that will be permanent, and then going into the next year, we're looking to raise big money toward an endowment for this fund. So we need people to help us go ahead and give this last, we're just close to $900 that we need toward this. Don't say, oh, I can't do it. Let's not get into poverty mindset. $5 donation, $10 donation, $20, $100. If you want to give a whole $1,000, we take it. If you go to Gullah Geechee Nation on Facebook and the fan page, at the top there's a gold box that says give. If you click on that box, take you right to a link where if you want to pay by credit card, PayPal, anything like that, you can make a donation right online today and help us reach this goal before the coalition's anniversary. We really want to finish this whole Gullah Geechee Gold Souls campaign by the end of this month, and you know that means we're only a few days away. So we're praying that we get some angels that will land, that will give, and that have a heart and a mind to give. And definitely we're going to continue this work to save Gullah Geechee land, because the land is where the culture stems from. The land is what allows us to keep the culture going and keep us alive here. And as I always say to people, we the vineyard, we in the grind, the way tall, tall. And so we have a lot of different land issues that we're fighting against, one of which has been this reassessment of land values that happened not only in Georgia and on the Georgia coast, but in South Carolina as well, where some of our land taxes have gone up anywhere from 65% to 500% higher in 1 year. And so you can only imagine the exorbitant tax bills that we all now have in hand that are going to be due January the 15th. And so we have a number of the rallying cries and things that we're doing in the community to try to help people appeal this. And so in South Carolina, in Beaufort County, South Carolina in particular, I know that people only have a few more days to go. You have less than a month. You have about 2.5 weeks to get appeal letters into the county, and so that you can appeal the massive reassessments. And let me make it clear to your listeners, they reassessed the land values and devalued the land. So they lowered how much they say the land is worth, but they increased the taxes. So as a mathematician, that's totally erroneous to me, that you would devalue something but charge more taxes for it. And their excuse is that they're sharing the burden of the taxes throughout the county, and they're sharing the burden of what has been a tax cap is what they're saying in Georgia, and they've released the cap. So now you're letting everything spill out? That's ridiculous. It's just another methodology to displace people from their land, especially indigenous people, especially people of African descent. The same thing that's going on in New Orleans with the gentrification, these rezoning districts, the rebuilding in such a way that's not beneficial to African tradition remaining there, or people who are disenfranchised being able to come up with the money to sustain themselves. This is the same plot and plan that's been used that has destroyed, removed, displaced numerous black townships and communities for generations. So because we are aware and we're awake, we need to stand together, we need to fight together, and as the songs say, work together, chillin', doing to get where the grit camp to meet in the promised land. And so we pray that you all will help us keep this land that the Creator promised to our ancestors here in the Gullah Geechee Nation by making a donation today to our Gullah Geechee Land and Legacy Fund. Again, go to Facebook or email us at gogeeko@AOL.com, and we can send you a direct link or PayPal invoice. You or if your person says, I don't like to split my money on the Internet, I'll send you a check or money order, then we can send you the mailing address from there. Or if you go to Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition, you'll see our mailing address is already there, and you can just send a contribution through the mail. But we definitely appreciate everybody, including Divine Prince, folks at Congo Square Preservation Society that have contributed throughout this year of this campaign, that have made different donations at various times, that have continued to push others to do the same, to go ahead and match what you've given. We really appreciate that effort because it's about a movement. It's not about the moment. It's not about just going ahead and getting the funds right now and then we have a big party. It's about the movement. It's about how many more people are going to be aware that our culture exists. So that's why even on Twitter, y'all can follow us. We're Gullah Geechee Folks on Twitter or at Gullah Geechee. And again, Gullah is G-U-L-L-A-H. Geechee is G-E-E-C-H-E-E. There is no I in Geechee, Gullah Geechee. So just at Gullah Geechee on Twitter. That way you can keep up with what's going on with the Land and Legacy Fund and with our Gullah Geechee Land and Legacy World Tour in 2014, beyond just us coming back to Congo Square and the Mardi Gras and the coming out. All right? So definitely we want y'all to continue to just work with us and stay strong. And definitely keep the drums sounding, keep the drums beating. And I appreciate everybody that I've been seeing on Facebook that's been making comments that you're listening to the show and it's powerful. We appreciate that, too.
We most certainly do. And I want to quickly add, too, before it escapes me. I lived in Wilmington, North Carolina for some time. Mm-hmm. So I know that for people who don't know the area, who haven't visited, they don't understand that Gullah Geechee is Gold Coast land.
Yes.
They're devaluing that land and then coming back and building resorts, condominiums,
right.
Rich,
mm-hmm.
wealthy communities behind gates and,
yes.
and private driveways. You know,
right.
I definitely saw it in Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Gullah Geechee territory runs from Jacksonville,
North Carolina. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Down.
So that's
mm-hmm.
right in the heart of this
yep.
beach land, this tourist land, this
yep.
land that they have financial designs on for the wealthy.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And it's interesting because those who don't really realize the history here, the Gullah Geechee Nation begins at Jacksonville, North Carolina, and extends southward to Jacksonville, Florida. So it encompasses all of what are called the Sea Islands and then 30 to 35 miles inland to the St. Johns River, which is often referred to as the Carolina, Georgia, Lowcountry, and northeastern Florida. Well, during chattel enslavement, this land was rice land. This land was indigo land. This land was Sea Island cotton land. So as y'all have often heard, cotton was king. Well, I often say rice was queen. And so this land had an economic vehicle that was running globally. And so you had transatlantic slave trade bringing in black cargo, black gold, and sending out the riches of that which was being harvested, that which was being engineered by African peoples on these islands. Well, then they said, well, the land that was closest to the shoreline wasn't of value to the enslavers because it was too mosquito-ridden. So they would move further inland. And that is why Gullah Geechee culture continued to be on the islands, because we were not inundated with being around people of European ancestry. We were around other Africans, so we could still have our spiritual practices. We could still have our drumming practices. We could still have our shout tradition, our healing herbs, and so on for generations. And so here it is that after they got into this thing, as you mentioned, in the 50s and the 60s of the affluent needing escapes for themselves, and they want retreat places that are resorts, and they want to golf, and they want to play tennis, and they want beaches. They wanted to get back to the water. So then what happens is the land that they very well said they didn't want, they wanted it now. And so now it becomes everyone wants a picturesque water view. So you have even islands where people are dredging or they're creating lagoons in order to create what they call a water fixture in order to make it a more sellable property when they're further inland. It's absolutely ridiculous. It is increasing the rapidity of climate change dynamics that are hitting our coast. We had the U.S. Department of Interior Secretary Sally Jewell here last week, and she was in a state of shock. But why did she end up coming this way? Because I've been in D.C. working with her and others before she became Secretary Jewell on America's Great Outdoors Initiative and continuing to put forth the fact that our lands are being more rapidly damaged because of overbuilding, because of these gated areas, because of these golf courses and their chemical runoff into the sea, and that needs to be examined when you start talking about sea level rise, climate change, acidification of the ocean. So right now, there are so many dynamics pushing in from offshore and pushing in from inland because of these same gated areas that you said and where the, quote, rich and affluent want to come and play and want to come and stay. There's many celebrities that own big mansions in gated areas on Hilton Head that are black celebrities because they have no knowledge and don't have a desire to support or be educated about the Gullah Geechee Nation. There are actors who are now doing DNA tests. Their family's from South Carolina. They know their family's from South Carolina. I've communicated directly with them and said, but your family is Gullah Geechee. Oh, yes, my mama mentioned that we was Geechee. Then I said, so then these are the things we're doing in the Gullah Geechee Nation. We'd love for you to come down and we could talk about some things. They go do a DNA test, and then they're worrying about going all the way back to Africa to help build a school or buy land there to do something, but they would not give $1. And these are people who make, you know, come on, $100,000, $500,000, $1 million on a movie or a TV show, and they wouldn't give $1 to help with Gullah Geechee land. But yet they already know for sure their family's from South Carolina. They don't know for sure that those DNA tests they're getting are accurate. That's a whole other game that's being played because of the desperation for people to reconnect. Some of those tests are not real. They don't have the database for them, but they're selling them to black people en masse, and people are anteing up this $400+. But so it's very interesting to me, like you said, that this whole history of devaluing the land, but we're going to come in and build on it, has been the same process again of disenfranchisement, re-enslavement. Because if you don't have land, as we mentioned before the break, you cannot sustain yourself. You cannot feed yourself. And whoever you have to go to get your food from, that's who you'll be subject to. So that's why people want to devalue the land, increase the tax, push us off. We go somewhere and rent. Now we're stuck. We're dependent instead of independent. So if you want to have independence, it's a value to help folks who are already there and not just live in the past and say, well, ooh, I wish I was around when there was a time when black people was independent. That time is now. But we need your support to stay like that so that we can continue to economically empower and spiritually empower each other.
And how concerned are you that that time might be fleeting? I'm going to assume that you have probably better access to some of these numbers than I do. But from just your experience and what you're seeing, how quickly are we really losing our land?
Well, it depends on which way we're looking at it. If we're looking at it from where people are talking about environmental issues, people are saying there's going to be certain parts of the land underwater in the next 20 years. And then if you use the same underwater term in regard to economics and people talking about all these people who've lost houses for foreclosure or put up their land as collateral to get a mobile home and then turn around and are losing it, unfortunately, you might say another 20 years on that note. But if you have people who have had the sensibility to put their family property into LLCs and have actually set up some other family corporations to have economic sustainability for generations, then we're talking about hundreds of years to go still. So people need to be aware that there are tools and there are mechanisms and there are groups of us who are doing things that we're not just telling you stuff. These are things that we know exist, that we know are working. And so there is hope on the horizon in that regard. But again, like it says, you can lead a horse to water and you can't, but you can't make him drink. Well, you can lead a man to knowledge, a woman to knowledge, but you can't make him think. And so that's the thing, as we've been continuously trying to lead people to the knowledge of what exists that is not the American Horror Show, that is the the positive, that is the uplifting point, that is the reality, and folks ain't listening. You know, they're so busy crying, like you said, about the poverty mindset, they don't look at the abundance, and they don't look at the wealth, and they don't look at the riches of being able to harvest your own food, to have land healthy enough to do that, to have waterways still healthy enough that you can harvest food and not get sick. You know, they're not looking at those things because that's not in their purview, because the TV shows are not showing you black folks living like that. So it's hard for people to realize that we've already been on this land, owning the land, for 151 years. Now, we were on the land since the 1600s, enslaved on it, but we've actually owned the property for 151 years. So I'm not anticipating my family not owning their property anytime soon. I'm anticipating at least another 151 years. But that's because I'm in a family that values the asset and values what their ancestors left them, wherein I can't say that about everybody.
And I'm not really sure how we can teach that. Particularly to those of us who have really no connection to it through experience whatsoever. And the younger you get, that becomes more and more common of generations who have no remembrance of it, even in their memory of land, of fruit, of gardening, of fishing, in somebody you're related to's water, as opposed to, you know, going to the public.
Going on a trip. Going
to a park or something.
So
it's becoming increasingly difficult to even teach that. And then we're competing against technology. I know even in terms of spirituality and religion and the illusion of ease, if you will, that technology gives us. Well, it's easy to put it in a microwave. Well, it's easy, you know, to run through the fast food. It's easy, you know, to go to Walmart as opposed to growing something, you know, fertilizing
slowly,
it, developing it.
And naturally,
So even teaching that is becoming increasingly difficult, where people aren't seeing it mirrored in any way in real life.
In real life,
Of their own or anyone around them. You know, I'm a renter. I live in the city of New Orleans, as it were. But I know where every fruit tree is in this city. I know where every edible plant is within a four-block radius of my house because I made it my business to know.
It's of interest to me.
It's of interest to me. I understand its value, and I made it my business to know. But teaching that, how do you teach that?
I have hundreds of people a year that come with the same story you outlined, other than the fact that they don't know the fruits and the vegetables and the edible plants in their neighborhoods in the cities. But they come from cities here, and they come to visit. And fortunately, even the Oba of Oyetunji Kingdom here within the Gullah Geechee Nation, who is Yoruba, he has been teaching a number of things. He has a Pan-African conference. So for our family, our kinfolks that are in urban areas, the only way to learn it is to come and see how we live it. We can't really show it to you here. This medium doesn't do it. You need to touch that soil. You need to get your hands dirty. Like you mentioned earlier, you saw me in the pictures, getting my hands dirty. And we can't be so prissy about it, sisters. We can't be so prissy about it, sisters, with just getting your nails done and your hair did, but you're starving, okay? Or because you're starving when you're still eating fast food, because that stuff is not real food. It's called an edible substance, food-like substance, and they're allowed to promote these things that are food-like substances that are not food as something that you can sell for people to eat. And so this is the thing, is that we have to continue to provide, even like you said, through these electronic mediums, ways that people who really want to learn or get to a point where they have to learn, that they will actually see their own people reflected in the process and say, well, okay, I see that there's some other black people doing it, so I'm not crazy. If I want to start gardening, if I want to plow up this front yard and start planting tomatoes, I'm not crazy, there's other black people doing it. Because I'm telling you right now, there are millionaires involved in this so-called Back to the Land movement,
mm-hmm.
and these are Anglo millionaires. These folks are making money hand over fist right now with all of this buy local that's going on in restaurants and so forth. They are farming the food. They're coming to the black elders, finding out how do you farm food. They're teaching them for $100 or $200, a little stipend. These people are going back then using our techniques and massively farming big areas, then having that food harvested by students at colleges for free as part of different courses. Then this food ends up in the local restaurants in the tourist districts. They make a whole bunch of money on the buy local movement. Our foods from the Gullah Geechee Nation are now ending up in Whole Foods and a lot of big chain stores because there's this whole movement through Carolina Grow Foods, who's one of our partners. So this is a whole system now that's driven off of what our ancestors were enslaved to do, that our people got away from, that are talking about the fast life, while the people who could afford the fast life are living it slowly. Because they realize it's more health benefit, it's more economic benefit to go green, go back to the land. As I told a gentleman who wants to work with us, I said, I'm not about no back to the land movement. I'm about to stay on the land movement. He said, thank you for telling me that, Queen Chris. I said, because my people ain't never left the land. It's about staying on the land, and it's about teaching our next generations how to do the same.
And let me tell you what else they're doing. Here in New Orleans, they're going into the inner city, the poor neighborhoods, the rundown neighborhoods. They're buying up property. They're buying up empty lots, and they're turning them into private gardens.
Yes.
And they're putting fences up around them with locks on them in the middle of your poor neighborhood. And like you said, that food ends up at the Whole Foods. It ends up at the local grocery store as organic. And we're getting no return on it whatsoever. Can't even pick off the tree.
See? And these are called community gardens all over the country. A bunch of nonprofits are forming these community gardens. But the profit end is what you said. Because then they come in and they have it harvested, and then it goes to these stores, it goes to these other places, the warehouses, and then it gets sold. There's a brother that has Eden Place up in the Chicagoland area doing outstanding work. He said to me, well, Queen Quet, I can't get our own people to come harvest the food. I said, what? He said, we started up a community garden. I said, okay. He said, and this was on a lot where drug dealers had previously been. I said, okay. He said, well, the drug dealers bombed my house when we came in and did that. He said, I didn't even have insurance on that house yet. We had just bought the house to return to our community from the suburbs and to help our own community. They bombed my house because they could no longer sell drugs there. And now when I asked community members, I said, well, look, this garden is open to everybody. All you got to do, come help us harvest the food. You can harvest food and take it home. And then we also need a certain amount of food, you know, harvest it, because then we can put it back into the programs we're doing here. The black folks told him, oh, you're trying to put us in slavery. We got away from that by moving up north. They don't like going to no field and stuff. But they will rather go in the supermarket or in the store and buy stuff or got some of their kids picked up for shoplifting food. So you'd rather have that than actually learn how to live from the land yourself or relearn? That's incredible to me. But in his case, his garden is open to the community, not gated from the community, like you just mentioned in your example.
Yes, indeed. And it sounds to me like what he was offering them was entrepreneurship.
Yes.
And we don't seem to want that. We want the easy out. And I talk about this a lot. I call it the shortcut. You know, you can offer $1 million. All you got to do is, you know, pick an acre of fruit for it. You ain't going to get nobody to do that. And I just don't understand it. I offered a young man here in our community a job, an acting job. All you got to do is use my computer, go on this site, you know, fill out your information, let me photocopy your ID, Social Security card, and today you'll be on the movie set, you'll be fed, and you'll come home with a check.
Right.
19 years old. Queen Cat, that was 2 weeks ago.
Are you kidding?
And then turn around a few hours later and ask me to help him buy a pack of cigarettes.
I just
don't understand what's going on. It's something mental health going on with our people.
Yeah.
And I work probably with more males, and I tend to focalize on that community, and
right.
I see it
right.
a lot. I don't have children.
Right.
I'm not around a lot of mothers with children, families in that way. So I tend to focus just on black men. I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned about the state of mind.
I feel you.
We're not even healthy enough to do the most simplest things for ourselves because something that's going on in our mind, and I don't understand it.
Well, see, part of that, of course, stems back to the post-traumatic slave syndrome and the acceptance of, and I usually don't use this word, but I'm sorry, it fits this occasion, the niggerization. We talked about the bastardization of culture, but there's been a niggerization of our community. And I say that in regard to the full definition of that word, lazy, shiftless individual. When you start to speak something over and over, you give it power.
Mm-hmm.
So when we've empowered that word, we've caused those spirits to inhabit our community. And we have opened vessels because they're too idle that have become willing hosts to that spirit. So we have a lot of spiritual ritual we got to do. We have a lot of education we got to do. We got a lot of support we got to give one another. Another brother just called me last night. He's a native Gullah Geechee, one of my closest friends in the world. And he was talking to me about the exact same thing you just said. It sounded like you had been tapping the phone from the conversation he had with me. Because he is mind-boggled as a man to see young brothers who, like you said, can't do the basic things to simply advance themselves, aren't interested in reading, aren't interested, you told him, get on the Internet, that brother might not have understood what to do, but his ego, his pride wouldn't bring him to say to you, well, Brother Divine, I don't actually know how to do that. I'm going to need your help. You see, that ego thing, you know, people will die. I mean, again, scriptures say pride cometh before a fall. I mean, people would rather die than to say, I don't know something. And that's unacceptable. I, like you, work a lot with brothers. That's just me. I'm usually surrounded with a lot of brothers that I work with. And I have seen this decline in the chi of our brothers, the energy, the power, the fire. I have seen it look like it's doused. You can look in brothers' eyes, and like you said, they'll be quicker to try to go get a pack of cigarettes than to actually get some money to finance themselves to do something else with. And that, again, we could go on and we could do another show, another day on that topic of the various ways that our community has been polluted. But the same way there are things that can pollute, there are things that can heal. And we have to, again, embrace our people. We got to uplift them. We got to continue to encourage them. That's the best that we can do. And if you pray for a person, right now the day they might not change instantaneously, but that person can change. So we also got to not just give up totally on each other either, because we are up against a lot of post-traumatic slave syndrome, unfortunately. And that's a critical element that, like I said, we'd have to do another whole broadcast just on that at some point. But we got to continue our libations, our traditions, our prayers, our meditations for upliftment, especially amongst our brothers. And we got to cut this thing of there being a competitiveness between males and females. That ain't none of our stuff. We need to cut that foolishness out, for real.
That's right. And you just now you just mind read into one of my conversations from earlier in today, and we call it doing the work. The libations, the prayers, the ancestral worship, the altars, we have got to do the work. And we cannot be too busy chasing, you know, the things of this Western world not do the work. Because at some point you will be depleted of energy. You will be depleted of light. You will be depleted of protection. Because my last question or my next question with our remaining moments to you was going to be, how do you and how do we encourage self-motivation? Because I know if I depended on a favorable response, if you will, from my community for everything that I do to sort of fuel me moving on to the next thing, would nothing get done?
Nothing will get done.
I have to find my own pleasure, my own satisfaction, my own sense of fulfillment in knowing that I'm doing what I'm called to do. So I want you to sort of offer us something.
Surely. As you've heard me mention throughout this discussion, and you often see me posting on Facebook, Twitter, and so forth, continue to stay prayed up is how we often say it here in the Gullah Geechee Nation. It's critical that you continue to always stay tapped into the highest source, the ultimate source, to the Creator, God Almighty. You must be tapped in all times and stay centered, even in the midst of chaos. You have to be able to find a centering point and continue to tap in to that power and that energy and continue to be guided by it, because there are going to be an onslaught of things in life that will discourage you, that will make you feel like what you're doing ain't making no difference to nobody, that nobody ain't paying no attention to what you're doing that for, or you strange, ain't nobody else doing that, what you doing that for? So you have to knock those voices out, and the power of being at one with God allows you to have more power than anything else there ever is in your realm that comes in to try to attack that which that you are to do. And of course, I'm a scientist, so I immediately think of the fact that for every action along the same line, so in other words, there's a cancellation effect. Well, if you continue to do positive, of course, negative is going to keep trying to come along that line because it's going to try to hit you. But that is why the kente cloth, that is why the quilts are never just straight lines. They're zigzagged patterns that move about so that you shift, and that evil energy, that negative spirit, cannot hit you straight across that line. You have to continue to be able to move and navigate it. The other thing is, keep positive people in your life. Nowadays, again, with social media, your family might be the most negative, dramatic people you ever want to meet on earth. You don't have to continue to socialize with them. If you have to cut them off, even though they're blood kin, do what you got to do. But definitely stay tuned to as much positive energy as you can amass, as often as you can amass it. And the best way to do that is staying linked to people who are uplifting. So if that means listening to uplifting music, if that means, you know, getting on a Twitter feed with nothing but inspirational messages every day, if that means being able to just communicate with Facebook folks that you know don't do drama but do upliftment, then do that. That also will help bring up your endorphins. And if you can keep that chemical process of endorphins high up in your body, it's a little difficult to be depressed. You know, if you're dancing, you're singing, you're beating your tambourine, you're beating your drum, it's a bit difficult to be depressed, you know. And so if you're shouting and you're praising, it's a bit difficult to be depressed. So these are things that I continue to know motivates me, keeps me going. I keep positive energy and music on. I cleanse my space with sage often, with different types of incense often, to keep negativity out of any entryways to any place that I'm going into, whether it's my house, whether that's a hotel room or anything. These are things that you have to continue to do. And most of all, you have to keep your body healthy, because your mind and your body are in sync. So if your body is in disarray and toxic, your mind is going to be in disarray and toxic. If your mind ends up in disarray and toxic, you make your body toxic and in disarray. So you need to keep your body healthy at all times, no matter what that takes, the investment in the front end instead of the investment at the back end. I tell people that they say organic food too expensive. I say, well, you're going to pay one way or the other. You can either pay for the organic or you can go harvest the organic, or you can pay the doctor when you get sick eating the garbage. So then they say, you know, I never thought of it like that. Then I need to start eating healthy. Right, eat healthy, take walks, go into private places, quiet spaces, places that uplift you, whether that's a museum, whether that's a park, whether it's by the water. Go somewhere that when you get there, it brings back nothing but good energy. And that will help you stay motivated. It'll help keep your mind stable. It'll help your body overall. So, you know, just with those tips right there, I mean, that keeps me going. Because in spite of, you know, old Facebook, there's 10,000 people on, doesn't mean anything. When you're not getting 10,000 people that say, well, okay, boom, I'm going to give to what you're doing. They're just on there lurking, you know. So you do wonder sometimes, is this making a difference at all? You know, so you need something that will keep you motivated. And those things, I can tell you, I'm a living witness to it, that those things help keep me motivated. But all the motivation in the world ain't going to do nothing if your body's broke down and your mind's broke down. So you got to transform your mind. You got to renew it every day. And you got to keep that body going and keep positive energy coming in and going out. And definitely on that note, my brother, I know I got to go out because I have another reporter that's here looking to interview me from an international newspaper as well. But I definitely want to thank you for, again, opening the airways here and for letting me have an opportunity for Crack My Teeth with Hunter and thing like that. And Reda was the Crack My Teeth with all of Hunter listeners and thing the Yeti this year and the Yeti Mova healing and thing like that and what's going on with we people. And I definitely look forward to all of you helping us continue with our Gullah Geechee land and especially keeping our African legacy going on and on and on and on.
Ashe, and we definitely, as always, appreciate your being here with us. Continue to invite you to come back and share with us. We look forward to Carnival and your being here with us Mardi Gras Day. We're going to cut up when you get here. So I'm really looking forward to that. And we wish you great prosperity, success, wealth, and health in all that you do. Ashe.
Share peace and blessings.
And in tune with our ancestors and the work, Big Mama and Big Papa, find something to do. You know, after you do all the holistic things, the diet things, the meditative things, the spiritual things, the prayer things, we've got to do the work. And we've got to move around. We've got to be active. And as Queen Ket said, you cannot be depressed. You cannot be negative in that environment of movement and activity. So I appreciate each and every one of you listening. This was a very powerful show. We got a lot of written commentary and feedback from our local community as well as our Gullah Geechee community as well as our international community, and we're grateful for that. We're grateful for your continued support and listenership of this show, and I do invite you to be back here tomorrow at noon U.S. Central Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio for Hoodoo, New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes. I'm going to continue with the topic, the bastardization of African American indigenous spiritual knowledge and systems. There's much more that needs to be said. Some of it came as a result of the positive feedback about the show and the videos that went along with the show that I did last week. So I'm going to take a little bit more time. I'm going to slow it down just a little bit further, and we will continue that topic as we move into the week. Until then, remember that all is truly and indeed a blessing if you can just see beyond the veils, for it is all just an illusion and a test, one of the greatest divine, all blessed mysteries of this life cycle. Ashe.
We are here. We are here but hurt. We are here and hurt. We are sick, some of us, even dying daily. We are here, sick,
Some of us even dying daily, diabetes, pressure, stress and depression, tearing us asunder into broken pieces of humanity. Exploited by urban toil, just exploited by urban toil and trouble, and too often also taking advantage of each other's weakness. We are barely surviving, even as some of us pretend to be living. But the truth is what it is. The truth is better must come. Change must be made if we are to rise, laugh, and truly live again. We can be our own salvation. We must take care of each other. Reach out in touch, powered by heart beating, the rhythm of love, embrace, making music that brings us together. Our music keeps us together. Our music keeps us together. Our music making the way we shape sound, the vibrations of putting things in motion, instruments and dance, hand claps and chants. Our music that we make for love's sake is the higher, in the higher realms. Our sound, our singing, our dance is the best medicine ever to cure what ails us. Here, what ails us. Here in America, what ails us is being here. What ails us is being here, up under the capitalist gun, going to work every day for chump change. Others making big bank off our poverty. We need the music. We need the music to survive this. We need the music, may there be music, we need the music. Music, the sound of us in love. Music, the sound of us in life. Music, our sound of love. Music, our sound of life. Listen to your heartbeat. Listen to how we sound, loving each other, caring for each other, helping each other. Listen and live, sing and dance. Make music. We have always made music, and the vibrations will be the basis of our healing. The vibrations, the heart sound, the drum, the human drum. The heart is our drum, the foundation of all the music we make, all the music we need, all the music we are. We be, and the music beat, the music beating, the music beat, the music beating, the music beat, the music, the music, the music, the music, the music.